I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Quake can't quake. The Zephyr is going to be pulverized like a Zendarian snail in a liquefactor. Discovery requires experimentation, and you think someone named Stoner would be a little more fun. We are talking Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 6, Adapt or Die. The AfterBuzz After Show starts right now. And of course, we've got the panel back together. We're not leaving anyone in this time jump. What's up, everybody?
Hey.
I love how we're all waving in silence. When I say everyone, I mean, of course, Katie Kawamoto is with us. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I know I took a break last week, but I'm back. Excited to talk about this episode. So.
Oh, I thought we left you on in a different decade, but you're here back with us.
I am. I found my way back.
Glad to have you on board, as you are going to be our empathetic feeler for the episode. You have the feelings. You know who doesn't have feelings? Christian. Christian Blatt has zero feelings.
Definitely no feelings whatsoever. That's why I pushed to leave Katie back in the 70s with Enoch, but nobody else agreed, so here she is.
I'm only basing it on your haircut, Christian. I'm going to base it on your haircut. You stole someone's face for sure.
I mean, I had the Ashton Kutcher That 70s Show do for about 6 months, and now I don't know what this is, but
no offense, but even your hair wasn't Ashton Kutcher. And of course, we have Rachel Radner. You might know her as Rachel Goodman. Some people know her as Lollipop, Rachel. Which is weird, but
Lollipop.
Hey, I don't judge Rachel.
Lollipop's my real name. That's my legal name. Rachel was just a nickname that I decided I wanted people to call me. So here I am. I'm very happy to be back. I am shipping Daisy and Daniel, as I kind of said last week, but this week more now than last week.
Well, I want to get screen time on this show, so I'm still shipping Tehran and Daisy. So.
Thank you, and we will be going to you for all questions. And of course, if you don't know who Tehran is, it is I will be hosting. My stripper name is Barbara, in case you were wondering. All I do is talk comic book talk with all of you, as we're going to be breaking down this episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 6, Adapt or Die, as thus. First, we're going to talk about Nathaniel. Nathaniel Malik was a huge part of the show. We're going to talk about Nathaniel. Director Mac Glamour and his girlfriend meet the parents. Great parent escape. Parent trap. Mac's parents are more than meets the eye. So we're going to talk about that storyline, the Mac and his parents storyline. Coulson and Meg need to get a room, which they do. Stoner is on board, how that got there. Coulson goes on a date with Sybil. I don't care how you call it. Coulson and Sybil go on a date. We're going to talk about that storyline. And of course, we have Daisy and Sousa are going home. Daisy and Sousa are locked up. So that's a third storyline. And then the last one is Deke getting ahead of himself. Simmons and Diana, her new best friend. And that storyline. So we get four separate storylines, which all coordinate into one amazing ending of the show. We also have our special segment, Agents of Should. What an agent should have done in a particular moment on the show. We have some news and gossip, of course. You're going to want to stay tuned. And quick predictions, as we always bring you the truth before it happens. Let you know. Let's talk about the overall thoughts on this week's episode. Let's start with, I don't know, Christian.
Overall thoughts were that they made the 4th of July seem a lot less fun than even our 4th of Julys are going to be this year. So, it definitely, here's the thing. You were talking about how Coulson went on that date. I bet that's not the first date where he brought a duffel bag filled with plastic explosives. I think that usually that's probably foreplay for Phil Coulson. Like, let me show you how I blow up a bridge. But I think there was some really good character stuff. And, a lot of questions about Daisy, questions about Coulson, you know, where they're at and how effective they're going to be going forward. Or is Coulson dead? I'm not convinced, but only partially because I saw the commercial for next week. Even then, though, he could still be dead. So, but in general, I thought it was fun. And, what I learned is from Mac's story is if you go back in time and you make a decision to save the lives of your parents, just don't. You know, it's not going to pay off in the end.
That's the lesson you learned?
Yeah, be like, they had a good run. You know, in my timeline, they were happy. So, I gotta cut them loose here, because if he had, then it would have been like, oh, and by the way, they're not dead because they're not real. So, that's really the lesson here. Let your parents die if you go back in time. Imagine Back to the Future if he just let his parents die.
I have a lot of faith in what you say, Christian, because you know that Daisy and I will end up together. Katie, Rachel, we don't have time to hear what you guys think. We're going to move on.
Well, thank you.
Okay, fine. Katie, if you don't believe Daisy and I will end up together, I'm less interested in your opinion, but would love to hear what your overall thoughts on this week's episode was.
I did enjoy this episode. I feel like we are starting to escalate more some of the stuff that we have been waiting to hear. The one thing that did upset me is we still did not see Fitz. I'm going to keep saying it until they bring him back onto the screen. I kept waiting for his name in those opening credits and didn't see it. So as far as that's concerned, I'm very much ready to see him again. But, you know, Coulson died again, so I'm curious to see how that goes. I liked it. I feel like it was definitely a filler episode. Like, it's joining the beginning and the end of the season, though. So, like, not my favorite episode yet.
Rachel.
Well, Barbara, I have to say I'm with Katie on the fact that we have not yet seen Fitz. This is episode 6, and I'm really sad because this is our last season. It is not like even in the past seasons where, for example, when Gemma was taken by, you know, went through the monolith and she was gone, we saw her, you know, when we got 20 plus episodes in the seasons where we weren't seeing one of them at first. So we had more time once they did come back into the picture, but we still got to see the other pair, even when one of them wasn't there. And this season, our final season, we haven't seen Fitz yet. I'm very sad about that. And I wish that he would just have been like, even like Christian and I were talking about this before we saw the episode. And I know Christian, you said you were betting we were going to see him. And so was I.
Well, I did put the odds at 100-1. So I wasn't that confident, but I was hopeful. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm very sad about that. I did really appreciate the moments that we got with Coulson and May, where they kind of addressed their past without actually directly talking about it yet. But at least we got a little bit of closure. I don't think Coulson is dead, but I do think that does call into question the fact that he knows he can't die, because even if his physical LMD body disintegrates, his mind will forever go on because they have a backup.
Yeah, they got a stack of floppy disks like this big. So it says backup Coulson on it. So yeah, I think they'll be fine.
Are they all in the same location?
No. It's like the Winklevoss twins and all of their Bitcoin. The passwords are spread in like 20 different banks throughout the country. Arkham O in the chat, I thought this was the best episode of the season so far. It was intense with great character moments and some twists and turns. I actually liked the Sousa and Daisy story. Well, you're not going to like Arkham O anymore, Tehran, mainly because of the performances. I thought Sousa telling his story was some good acting. Also, Mac's parents being Chronicoms was a nice twist and heartbreaking for Mac. Mac and Daisy really had a tough time. Yeah, I think not a great day for Mac and Daisy. And even if he can come back, also not a great day for Coulson.
Well,
three had a bad day.
Mac has definitely lost everybody you could lose. He's lost his girlfriend. He's lost his daughter. He's lost both his parents. I mean, Mac clearly has to be suffering from some form of PTSD throughout all the seasons. I did like at the end how Deke says, I kind of know what he's going through because he's the one who's also lost his whole world as well. To me, it was actually one of the better episodes. I loved how fast-paced it was. So much action, so many things happening, so many twists and turns. Coulson talking to Sybil, Sybil being very open in response. Mac's parents ending up being Chromacons. All of these played for me. I played Stoner coming around after we all of us thinking Stoner was actually Hydra. all these things played, every single bit played, and it's made me definitely want to watch next week's show. And I want to even say Coulson's dead just to disagree with everyone, but of course he's not. That's his superpower. He doesn't die.
Billie Jean Girl 24 in the chat. Coulson is the Kenny of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He keeps dying, obviously.
That's a real thing. Let's get to talk about Nathaniel Malick. Now, this is a very different Nathaniel that we've seen from the past and the one that existed in the original timeline, who was supposed to die. After being taken hostage and then let go and watching Quake's powers, he's become obsessed with becoming an Inhuman, and now he has become sort of a doctor of doom himself. What were your thoughts on Nathaniel Malick?
So I loved the callback in this episode to Daniel Whitehall. We had heard that that's who Malick was actually speaking with at the end of episode 5. So we knew that this is where this was headed. But the callback in the sense of what Whitehall did to Daisy's mother back, you know, I think it was season 2. And just kind of calling back to that and that performance, I think, as they had mentioned in the chat, between Daisy and Daniel in general, and anyone who hasn't watched Agent Carter, Daniel Whitehall was, you know, as Reinhardt, he was also in Agent Carter as well. So it was a callback to that show. And so I was definitely here for all of that. And but Nathaniel Malick as a character seemed kind of not, he didn't seem like the strongest villain to me. So I kind of sensed that he was going to try what Whitehall did. But then as soon as Nathaniel took the powers, that his body would not be able to survive it.
Katie?
I wrote that he was creepy in my notes because he did give me this really creepiness that you weren't sure, you knew he would do his own thing, but you weren't sure what direction it would go. And he just, I wouldn't say he wasn't a good villain, but I wouldn't say he was a bad villain at the same time, just kind of in the middle. I don't think he thought everything through with the whole, like kind of what Rachel was saying with, yeah, you have her powers. Now what? You kind of have to prep your body for a transition of power like that. So maybe not the smartest guy. So.
Christian. In the chat, Ivan Soto completes Tehran's thought that Nathaniel becomes Dr. Mengele, essentially experimenting on humans and inhumans. And I think it'll be interesting because the way that was left was, you know, that his bones couldn't handle the Quake power. So I think we're going to see in either next episode or possibly, you know, a couple weeks, what happened to him because he did this. I suspect it didn't kill him because otherwise we would have seen that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I guess this means that did Daisy have her powers taken away? In which case, I don't know. I always have a big problem with being able to take abilities away without killing someone. You know, it's one of many, put 100 more many's in there, problems with X-Men The Last Stand was the idea that you could take their powers away and that they're still alive. So, you know, I think that was problematic. I lost the comment, but somebody in the chat said that, you know, this was more of a transition episode than a filler just because so much happened. I have to agree that, you know, Daisy losing her powers, at least theoretically losing her powers, which, by the way, if you do refer back to that at the very end, you realize that Magneto actually still does have at least a little bit of his power. So we'll see what happens with her. And Ivan Soto saying that we saw Nathaniel dead. I don't believe that I saw that. I saw him collapse and he said his bones hurt. But I don't think he like died. And on this show, even if you hold a funeral for somebody, it doesn't mean they're dead.
So I assumed he had died. I don't think that we saw him, but he did collapse. I'm assuming he's done. I do not expect to see Nathaniel again with you know, we don't have that many episodes left. I do think we're gonna see Gideon. I think he's going to make an appearance because we, I don't think we're done with him. He might be the next guy who tries to, you know, square off with them.
It just seems kind of anticlimactic if that's the only time we see him a little bit. Like, oh, wait, we build this up as his villain and then all of a sudden he's gone. I think that would be the only problem I have with it.
It just tells you what that actor's day rate was, that they were like, nah, we don't need him back. It's fine.
It's interesting Christian brings up the actors in the day rate, because I think of things like that at times when I watch the show. And this episode, I think Chloe Bennett definitely won because she said all of half a word. So yeah. She got to, like, what's the script?
Look.
Got it.
You want a little really quick, I know it's a tangent, behind the scenes stuff. If in the recap of a show you're watching, you see a character that you haven't seen for a while, they are definitely in that episode because they're getting paid for being in the recap. So there you go. That's one to grow on.
That is definitely the way it works. I would say that I think Nathaniel, I enjoyed him as a villain because of how vicious he did come off. I can see him not being villainous enough. That's because he doesn't think he's a villain. He's not even supposed to exist. He's supposed to have already been dead. I really liked when he took the powers. I agree with Christian. If you're going to take powers, the person should die. If it should be part of who you are. When he starts saying, my bones are breaking apart, and then, you know, he can't control the power, he's shaking the entire place, and the lumber falls on him. I really like that scene. I did not like Daisy waking up and not having powers because of whatever he injected in her. Yeah. I don't think that suppression factor should be a thing. So we see that come to play a lot. It's an easy writing trope where, oh no, I was injected with something that's suppressing my powers. Well, if that's the case, why can't we do that more often? Why can't we suppress powers? What happens to that energy? What happens to whatever that... I'm already suspending disbelief by saying you have powers that don't make any sense in the physics world. Now you're saying I can shut them off with an injection. And also, are we going to forget Daisy hid the piece of glass inside her hand? Are we going to just act like that never happened and ripped it out? And Susan rips it out. It's like, maybe you have fight left in you. Yeah, but not any blood. Her hand should have been just gushing. Gushing.
True.
I chose to believe it.
I suspended this. Yeah, I was fine with it. I was like, whatever. I was more worried that they weren't going to get out of there. And I knew that Daisy wouldn't die because hopefully they will not kill off a main character in the final season. Hopefully. But I'm
killed
assuming,
off Coulson.
Well, he's coming back. That's not yeah, the.
That's a good point. You're right. Yeah. You're right.
But no, I was assuming they wouldn't kill her off considering it's the last season. And but that was my worry, is that they were somehow, she was going to actually die. Going back to what Christian said, because usually, like, I think it makes more sense from a storytelling standpoint, if they are going to take your powers, the person who has these powers ripped for them probably should die. That's, I mean, not that we want them to, but it makes more sense that way, and there's more at stake. So that's what I was worried about, that they were hinting at the fact that Daisy was going to die. Also, her mom, when Daniel Whitehall did this to her, she really only survived because of her power, which was the regeneration. And
regeneration.
Exactly. That's why Daisy, to me, it doesn't make sense that she would survive.
Doesn't make sense. And I'm talking, even if I break a nail, I'm ready to die. So if you strip my powers, I feel like I agree. There should be some type of consequence. Daisy and Sousa escape. What did you guys think about that escape? And also, are we on board for Sousa and Daisy?
I am totally on board.
Okay, well then Rachel's off the panel. Who else has an opinion on this matter?
You know, I'm team Tehran and Daisy all the way.
Thank you, Christian.
Okay, can I say this?
Chloe Bennett. Rebecca? I'm so sorry. I always forget your name. What is
Barbara? Chloe Bennett and Tehran and Daisy and Daniel. Fair enough?
No.
No, because Chloe Bennett has terrible taste in men.
Yeah, I don't want
She's like Chloe. Dating Logan Paul or Jake Paul. So no.
Yeah, I don't want I don't want Chloe. I yeah. want Daisy. Daisy's the love of my life. And so, here, listen, replaceable Radner, let me explain something to you, okay? But honestly, are we all on board for Sousa and Daisy? And is that where they're headed?
I'm going to argue yes, that is where they're headed. And not just because I want them to be there, but because of the fact that at the end of the episode, they had Daniel literally sitting next to Daisy. Deke isn't even sitting in there. Deke, like, comes in and leaves. No. Daniel is sitting there, And Gemma says to him, you know, are you sure you can leave now? Daniel literally looks over at Daisy and says, I'm exactly where I belong. Mm. I think they're hinting at it. Yeah.
I hope they kill him. I hope he dies.
Yeah, I do think that that is their intention, is to ship those two. I still, as much as I love Deke and Daisy, I understand why they're not together, but I'm still a little bit sad about that. But I do think that's where the show is going with, towards the two of them. So
I could be okay with the Deke Daisy. I could be okay. Yeah. Deke, to me, I feel like Deke and Daisy is a thing. I don't know. Sousa pops up and now that's going to be the thing.
Yeah. I mean,
there's nothing worse than, you know, we know that Deke is from, what, 200 years in the future. So imagine being cuckolded by a guy who was born 300 years before you. You know, he sweeps in and steals your girl. And you're like, come on, I gave her lemons and everything.
Lemons, bro.
Yeah. I think that the interesting thing is for Daniel Sousa, who considered himself Peggy Carter's consolation prize to Steve Rogers, now Daisy would be the consolation prize to Peggy Carter, who, I love Daisy, but come on.
Hurt people hurt people.
Okay, here's
that's
the
why I'm here, to hurt people.
This is what I was thinking. If poor Daniel Sousa could not end up with Peggy, because I did ship them, I just ship Peggy and Steve Rogers more. But I did ship, like, watching Agent Carter, I really did want Peggy and Daniel to be together when I thought that Peggy couldn't be with Steve. But now that things have changed, now I'm like, no, Daniel should be happy, and why not be with Daisy?
You know what? It's 2020. Why couldn't Daniel just be with Steve?
Okay. You, he could be with Steve, too.
Come on.
So they get back on the ship. They make it home. That storyline's out of the way. Wasn't one of my favorites simply because of how little it played. I feel like it could have played a lot more. They played the other two storylines extremely well. Let's go to the Coulson May being caught coming off last episode's storyline. What were your thoughts on Coulson and May in the interrogation room, Katie?
In the interrogation room. So I watched both episodes this week. Which part was the interrogation room again?
Coulson and May are being interrogated by Stoner, and the other agent comes in and takes Stoner away. But basically the concept is they are expressing to Stoner that he's no longer in control, that there are chromacons.
Yes.
And they're handcuffed.
Yeah. So when they're trying to say that we're helping you and these are bad guys. I love whenever we get to see a Melinda and Coulson scene, because just naturally their chemistry is there, even if they're not having a romantic scene. So being able to see the two of them team up again and for the greater good, I just love it. They make a good team, and I do wish maybe they had let people in on their plan or told some people before a little bit. I feel like the more that they try to withhold information, it makes them do steps that they wouldn't have had to do if they had just told people to begin with. I feel like they're taking extra steps that they wouldn't have needed to. So, but they're great. I mean, they work well together. And then we got to also see some more fighting in this episode too, by the way, because we kind of have been a little bit low on the action scenes, I feel like, compared to past seasons. So this season, I'm glad we also got to see everybody kick some more ass.
We did get to see them.
Yeah, as long as you don't like quake effects, because the season has been very light on those, and we may never see them again if she had her powers taken away.
True.
And I have to apologize to the rest of the panel that, you know, I mentioned last week that I had ordered us those sweet shield blue jumpsuits. They haven't come in yet. They're back ordered. I'm hoping we have them in time for the series finale. I'll keep everybody posted. So it was hard for me to concentrate on that scene at first because I've just how much I want that jumpsuit or one of them. But I think it is great to see this permutation of May and Coulson, especially the way it kind of plays out where she's just like, it'll be fine because, you know, you're going to come back. You always do. But then we see late in the episode just the realization of, he might not come back. And even so, this really isn't him. So at some point, she's going to have to try and actually deal with her own feelings about the fact that, I mean, he's just gone. Her Coulson will never be back. So just some approximation. So, yeah, I thought that was some great stuff. And how many times have we seen Phil Coulson make the ultimate sacrifice for us, the viewer? I thought it was very characteristic of him, even though, of course, it's actually an approximation of him, you know, this version, this LMD Chronicom version of him.
See, I feel like...
Our LMD, Rachel, please, yes.
I feel like this version of him is just as real as any other actual Coulson iteration we've seen. And I think that's kind of, to me, what I picked up from May is that she finally understood, because she said, I can only mourn you so many times. And I think she finally understood that now, no matter what happens, he will most likely be coming back and that she will see him again. And I think this kind of opened up, you know, this opened up like a way for her to heal. And I just really feel like she's going to come when, you know, Coulson does come back, if his body has been destroyed, or the LMD body, I should say, or if maybe it wasn't destroyed. But either way, when he comes back again, they'll be able to pick up from where they left off.
You know, I like the interaction in the interrogation room where May puts down her wall because Coulson, the LMD, pushes her on, why are you being like this? You can't feel me, but I can't feel you in return. And May says, because I lose you every time and I mourn you and I'm tired of it. And so I'm not going to do the same thing, as in I'm not going to get close to this version of you because I know I'm going to lose you and have to mourn. And of course, that was a foreshadow for what happens. We also get May using her powers very much in this episode, in two defining scenes. First with the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that takes Stoner down to the basement, and secondly with Mac's parents, using her power to realize that they're Chromacons. May and Coulson go to the rescue of Stoner. What were your thoughts on that part of the episode, replaceable Radner?
I loved it. I loved the fact that they saved him. I've actually come to like Stoner as a character. Yeah. Even though he's had his moments where we did not know if he was going to do the right thing, but I've come to like him, and I was very happy when they stepped in just in time to grab him. And it was really funny to me too when they grabbed him from that, you know, whatever, that table, and he literally jumped up and he's like, "I believe you, I believe you." I was like, "Okay, he's on their side now." I really hope that wherever the rest of the team has gone. We don't know yet. We have a hint that two specific characters have gone to the 80s, but I hope that wherever the rest of the crew goes on the Zephyr, that they do end up seeing Stoner again at a later time.
Oh, and he's still carrying a torch for Melinda May. I thought that her reaction when she actually got all of his emotions was like, whoa, all right, that's a lot of man right there, Stoner. So, I thought it was great. I like the same moment that you referenced, Rachel, that was my thought. I'm like, let's not waste the time. He's like, he's a man of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, you give him a really far-fetched story, but then he sees that they tried to steal his face and all of that. And he's like, oh yeah, I definitely believe you. I'm on board now. And I thought it was great. I liked seeing how that all played out. And I'm also convinced we will get more of Agent Stoner, if not next week, in the very near future.
That's what you said about Fitz. Katie, can we ask you what you think?
First of all, I was really excited to see that Patrick Warburton was in the episode, because I wasn't here last week, and I do love him. And every time I see him in a show, it just adds some sort of, just makes me smile. And I did like his arc a lot, in the sense that sometimes you don't believe everybody at their word, which I think is smart in this show. You don't want to just believe what people say, because things happen. But when you finally see that proof, and then it clicked, and, you know, most people are going to see that proof and turn around. And so I do like that we got to see the redemption of him being like, all right, sorry, y'all, that was my bad. And that's a pretty freaky thing to go through. So I think anybody would want to side with them after something like that happened. I mean, I don't want my face, like, my memories planted on a robot. I mean.
Speak for yourself.
Also, it was really creepy seeing the faceless bodies that were just sitting on the side of the room.
I feel like it would be an improvement for me. So you ladies can feel however you want about it.
Christian, that's true. So here's the thing. The concept is, of course, Patrick Warburton is a very likable person. We enjoy Stoner. I like how we were being set up to think that Stoner was possibly a part of Hydra, and it seems that he's not at this moment. So the feeling that May got last week in the previous episode was simply that he did not believe them, even though he was misleading them or guiding them, that he did. But in this episode, we realize once faced with the truth, it took him no time to realize that it was true. And he was very much on board because he's very much responsible for S.H.I.E.L.D. and a good person. At least that's how it's playing out as we speak. So we also get Coulson going down even further below by making the connection that the Chronicom said, we're going to bring them up. He goes down and finds basically the headquarters or lair of the Chromacons. They're all in pods, ready to be awakened and given orders. Coulson goes in and starts speaking to Sybil, the predictor. And we see Sybil in the beginning of the episode as the Chromacons are not happy with her assessment of the plan. And yet she basically puts aside their worries by saying the plan is correct, directly on board. We are overwhelming the S.H.I.E.L.D. people. What do you think about Sybil and the conversation ultimately that Sybil and Coulson have, Christian?
Well, my first thought was get a room, but then I realized they had gotten a room and it was just a virtual room, kind of like what we're doing right now. But I think it's interesting how the Chronicoms are speaking to this Coulson, that they're like, look, you're going to come around at some point because you're not real. You're not human. You're not a real boy, Pinocchio. So I think that it's interesting that it means that she had no idea what he was about to do. But also there's still the little nagging feeling of like, or did she, and she knows he's going to be back because, you know, just that sort of self-awareness. So I think it'll be interesting to see them interact again. As I referenced earlier, you know, he was definitely a Boy Scout back in the day because he's be prepared for anything. Always have as much plastic explosives as you possibly can fit in a bag, because you never know when you're going to have to blow yourself up and everybody around you. Yeah. So good for you. You get a very special merit badge for that, Phil.
Rachel.
I don't trust her. I mean, obviously, the conversation, it obviously wasn't going in Coulson's favor anyway, but I feel like, you know, the way that Christian kind of is saying too, that Sybil probably knows already what was going to happen. That's the problem, is that it feels like the Chronicons are going to be very hard to beat, because they literally, like, time is their power. They know the future and the past. They know what's going to happen. So I feel like she might have been playing that down, and maybe her, she didn't really want to give like a poker face that she knew what was happening, so she kind of just reacted more like she was kind of in shock when Coulson gave her the big reveal. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with her and with the Chronicons. And I mean obviously this is their final season, so there has to be some kind of resolution, but I don't think that S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to beat them.
Katie.
I think she thinks that she knows everything is going to work out, and she has no doubt in her mind. But I feel like she sees things very literally and doesn't see how many different aspects could go wrong and how many different ways that S.H.I.E.L.D. can come back at her. So I feel like her end game might cloud her sense of judgment going into the future. And Coulson and her think very similarly in some ways, and they just come at it in different angles. So they kind of complement each other. I think it takes one to know one kind of thing. Coulson understands her and is able to also know where she's going by that conversation. I think he learned more than we know he learned. So.
Well, he might have learned a lot, but he blew up. So
I mean, yeah.
Unless his LMD consciousness is transferred somehow to a home base of LMD technology that doesn't exist regardless.
Yeah.
How would they know? I do think the conversation was extremely pertinent. I do, on the other hand, believe Sybil. I think Sybil was very open and honest. Her arrogance or that hubris is going to be their biggest weakness. Coulson brings up three differences. What are those three differences? Sacrifice, we will never give up, and Coulson. Coulson hasn't feared death in a long time. Those are the three differences that he explains and expresses. So we get this. Coulson, of course, self-sacrificing once again, going with May, going back to the ship. So now we have Daisy and Sousa. They're at home. May, she's at home on the ship. We have two more storylines to get through. The last powerful storyline is, of course, Mac and saving his parents. Going into the base, doing the transparent, very predictable thing, saving his parents, getting them out, and we get that awkward moment when they meet each other for the first time and Mac hugs his mom. What did you think about that, Katie?
I felt in that moment, we did see a side of Mac. We're used to seeing Mac be very professional, be very by the book. And in that moment, we saw a little bit of his emotions get the best of him and see that little bit of the vulnerable side. And I do enjoy when we're able to see those different dimensions, because we are starting to delve into the emotional side of pretty much every single character this season. And it broke me a little bit, honestly, because I felt that it was not going to end well. Just from that moment and the way that he acted, I was worried about how he would act later if things didn't go his way. And I felt it foreshadowed a little bit.
Yeah, it was so very tough. Rachel. Yeah.
See, I didn't really pick up on the fact that they could have been Chronicons from the gate, but I sensed, like you, Katie, that something was off. Mm-hmm. And my biggest worry was, okay, so you get them out of here and you get them back home. Who's to say that the Chronicons don't go back after his parents again, now that they've already seen too much, or no, you know, like just because of after this experience, I feel like his parents, even if no one was after them, they probably would have been watching their backs for the rest of their lives, just because of how traumatic this was. So when we got the reveal that these were Chronicons and not his real parents anymore, it broke my heart for Mac, because I know what he's gone through. We watched him lose his daughter after being in the framework and literally believing he had a daughter and then he had to give her up after actually losing a daughter. It's just, this is someone who's already been through so much heartbreak that it really pained me to have to see him fight not only his father, but then his mother. And then that moment at the end where he literally, like, he knows she's a Chronicon, but she looks at him and says, you know, please, and like begs for her life. And this is the face of his mother. And he has to like go against his better judgment, the judgment that sees his mother, and actually push her off the ship. I can only imagine what that would be like for a person to have to do that to someone who acts and looks exactly like their parent.
Yeah, as someone who's actually had to do that to their parent, let me tell you, it's not as hard as you think. One time, you know, I had to push
I'm not surprised.
Off a carnival cruise into the water, and I was like, and she was like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know." We get a discount.
I had to do basically the same thing to Patty Duke's identical cousin, and it still doesn't feel right. But to Rachel's point, there's that. And then there's also watching your girlfriend snap the neck of the representation of your father, even though you know it's not really him. But the visual is watching your girlfriend snap his neck. And just wanted to a comment from earlier that I saved from Jenna James in the chat. The actor who plays Mac, that's Henry Simmons, conveys that, quote, big man, big heart thing very well. Empathy. I think he's always done a great job of that. And, you know, the fact that he just, as soon as they end up in their next jump, he's like, yeah, I just got to clear my head for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I thought that all of this was good. And sometimes I think it's an asset that I'm so dumb. I had no idea that his parents weren't his parents. I didn't think anything was fishy. I was just like, oh yeah, they'll just drop him off forever. And so when May said that, I'm like, I knew she was right. And I'm like, oh man, you know, that's, I just didn't see that coming. And it was, I thought it, you really feel for the guy, because as we've already talked about, it's just all the things that he's lost throughout the run of the series. So, you know, I expect, even though, you know, this is the last season, I feel like we're not done dealing with this yet. You know, I think as soon as next week, this will still be something that he's trying to work through. And I agree with Jenna. I think he did an amazing job of conveying all that to us.
I wonder if he goes and looks for his family just to see what does happen to them now that they're being raised without parents. Remember, there's a couple boys here that now we're supposed to have a picnic that's clearly stuck out in his mind where he remembers exactly what they did for this bicentennial. And now none of that goes down. And the Chromacons actually say, well, we took care of them a long time ago. Yeah. We get this vulnerability in Mac, this teddy bear, big bear, grizzly bear, this big man with the heart of gold. So getting to see him and watching Yo-Yo, for example, listening to stories about Mac as a boy, and then Mac going, you know what I heard makes boys come out of their shells, the ones who act really serious, ATVs, and all these things. Because how would one act if they went back and saw their family and saw their parents, the people who we look up to our whole lives as human beings? It's just very difficult to watch Mac have to go through this. And of course, him throwing his mother off of that plane and basically to her death was so great to watch. Loved that scene. Loved watching her. Like, that was the best. He like throws his dad out and then he throws his mom out. It's like, sheesh, what more can we put this character through? Mac has been through it all. I did want to point out something. And we'll get into this a lot more when we talk about Deke and Simmons, because that's the last storyline. And even though it was the weakest, there is a significance there that's going to play back, I feel like. People, once again, just ishing on Deke. Just Deke messes up. It's like, oh, I'm so annoyed with you. No one else treats Mac like he's the director except for Deke. Everyone piles on poor Deke. Deke, of course, makes the move of incapacitating Enoch when he sees Enoch fidgeting with Simmons's neck with this apparatus. He has no idea what it is. It does look like Enoch is doing something extremely shady. Enoch is a Chromacon. I mean, there's a lot that goes on, and then Deke has to apologize at the end. What are your thoughts on the Deke, Simmons, and Enoch storyline that's them on the ship for the whole time? Let's start with Christian.
Well, I liked that, his grandma made him apologize to Enoch. And what did you say to Mr. Enoch? But I also love that Enoch's response of just, this is the most wonderful thing I could ever be told, that he's an important part of their family, even though they haven't treated him like it. I thought it was interesting because Deke responded in the way that made the most sense of like, yeah, Enoch is this outsider. We really don't know that much about him. And, you know, it looks like he's doing something to hurt his grandmother. So obviously, you know, he grabbed the paddles. He didn't shoot him. He just shocked him, you know. And I think that, it is sort of somewhat insignificant in the grand scope of the episode. But I think it is important character work because we're really getting the sense, and we talked a little bit about this last week, of just, you know, what's happened to Gemma between seasons. You know, now we see her, or I guess it was before the finale of last season, you know, so how long she's been, you know, and all of this. And I do find it, I watching them explore this a little bit more of what has actually happened to her and what she willingly did, I think is going to be very interesting.
I was convinced that Gemma was a Chronicon up until they explained that chip. Because here's the thing is that, you know, with Coulson, they literally uploaded his memories into an LMD body. Who was to say they couldn't have just done that with Gemma? Now, granted, we've seen that that isn't really the case as far as we know, that it is just Diana, the chip. But I did really appreciate that we got more information. I think we needed it. I'm still upset about Fitz not being in the episode. I don't know. I'm wondering if maybe he's either on the ship somewhere hiding and he's just going to pop out next episode, or if maybe he's just been tailing them the whole time. And that's why it's such a challenge to, for Gemma. And she really needs this chip, because otherwise, like, I feel like maybe she does know, she would know something that, just by kind of knowing enough, she'd understand exactly what he was doing, which makes me think that he literally was just following them or is following them and just kind of doing something else behind the scenes. And we're going to find out when we actually get to see him.
Katie.
The relationship between Simmons and Fitz and Deke, I find it very a different depth than the, we're used to them seeing that they're all a family in the sense that they all work together. They see each other as family. But we don't have any other actual family relationships in the show. And that's where we get that little bit of a difference between Deke and just the amount of respect that they have for each other and care for each other as if he cares for everybody. We know that, but it's different. Now, is he doing it because he doesn't want to fade from existence? I don't think so. I think he genuinely is like, this is my grandma. I'm going to treat her with respect, just like I would any other family, because she's the only actual family that he still has. So it's just a beautiful dimension. And to see that side of Deke is my favorite side of Deke, to see the amount of care that he puts into the relationships with everybody that are important to him. So, yeah. I hate that they all, you know, dog on him all the time, because I actually have loved Deke since the beginning. So,
yeah. Yeah, they kind of dog on him. They dog on him. I love Deke. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out.
Well, I do believe, Katie, that's because you've always had a thing for guys who drink Zima. And I think that's really, you can't see past that. And
that's actually something.
Yeah.
That's actually a lot of people don't know when you're a Zima sexual. That's actually a thing. That's actually a thing. I think that the way it played out, it did make sense for Deke. I do also think that Gemma had a grandmother moment with Deke at the end when she basically is vulnerable and confides in him. That was more than just, I'm telling you something, Deke. It was more like, Deke, we are family, so let me express how I really feel. You're the closest I can to Fitz. It would be very interesting if Fitz is on board the ship. That would actually be a great plot twist if Fitz is there the whole time, but we can't because he's in a different plane, but hidden somewhere on the ship so that he's always safe. We'll find out more as we get into next week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We end this episode with Matt getting off the ship when they jump. Coulson's already, of course, dead. Matt gets off the ship. He needs some air. Deke goes after Mac after a little bit of time. And as he goes after Mac, we get a frantic call. We're about to jump. And the ship jumps. Mac decides the worst time to play I Can't Hear You. So we'll find out how that plays out next week. Let's play our special segment, Agents of Should. What is something that an agent should have done on this episode, Christian?
Mac should have pushed his parents out of the plane last week. Saved everybody a lot of heartache. I know I essentially said that before, but that's how strongly I feel about it.
Okay.
Megan. Katie.
You do look like a Megan, it's true.
No. Megan is, listen, Rachel, until she recognizes that Daisy and I are meant to be together, she has no actual identity, okay? She is anyone but whatever her name is, okay?
Okay, Barbara.
So, Katie.
I thought that Simmons should have let Deke know sooner. It would have saved her a lot of trouble, that she would have not as lost as much precious time. And because it's his family, I think it would have also been another way for them to bond. But I get why she didn't, but I still think maybe she should have.
She should have. So, you know what's even worse? The reason I threw Megan, I couldn't think of another R name. Think of Rebecca. Rebecca. Rebecca, please. I couldn't think of an R name to save my life, by the way.
Rihanna.
That's all right.
Definitely that's not Rihanna. Christian, apologize for that. Please.
Ryan.
That's true.
It's true. Ryan is a girl's name, or can be. Yeah.
Ryan. Or any name could have been a girl's name. I literally couldn't think of a name.
Robert.
Yeah, I couldn't think of those names in a moment.
Yeah. So,
please, replace
my moment. Yes.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I said this last week. I'm going to say it again because it ties in. Daisy and or Daniel should have been keeping a better watch so that Nathaniel did not sneak up on them and grab them. It would have prevented exactly what happened in this episode with Daisy having her power stripped. And I'm assuming that she may not be able to quake again. I mean, we don't know yet, but the whole thing could have been like, Nathaniel to me is not that bad of a guy. Is not that bad of a villain in the sense that he's bad, but I don't think he's really that good at what he does. They could have prevented that from happening.
But you forget how cool her phone was. The fact that she could, it was very distracting to show off the phone.
It was. I'm going to go with, actually, since Batman rules don't apply and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. often kill people, they should have killed Nathaniel. They should have made sure that he was dead as they walked out. That's definitely where I've been very upset that Quake hasn't been quaking this episode or anything this season. So now that she's lost her power, we haven't even seen you use your power. You might as well have not had a power to begin with. But then as we walk out, we didn't take any steps to finish off Nathaniel. I think that's going to come back and bite them in the butt. Going to news and gossip. Now, this is what gets to play. We are looking at a final season. Are we going to get Fitz? We're not the only ones who are wondering this. We get our good friends at Cinema Blend who also are wondering about Fitz. Fitz is obviously a character who everyone loves. So we are all wondering the same thing. Where has Fitz been? Concept is Fitz is possibly working on a different show. Hasn't been as much in this episode. Cinema Blend plays a great article. You might want to take a look at that. Screen Rant also has a great follow-up to that. So please, let's find out. Let's start hashtagging Fitz and try to bring him back. And let's jump into predictions, shall we? One line about a prediction of what can happen, what will happen. Let's start with, I can't think of another R name, Radner.
Daisy and Daniel, period.
Okay, done. We're done. We're done with you. I never want to hear from you again. Please, you're removed. Removed Radner. Removed Radner. Katie.
Deke is all, mom is actually Fitzsimmons. That's actually his parents, not his grandparents.
Ooh, that would
Diana,
make
sense. Diana, I'm pretty sure it's his mom's name. He said his mom's name was Diana, I believe. So I think her real she's going to forget her real name and she's going to go by Diana.
Oh, wow. That's a good play. Christian.
You're so much smarter than I am. And by the way, in the chat, Kevin Seeley mentioned that Diana the Chip is the name for Elizabeth Henstridge's engagement ring. So that's where the name Diana came from.
Wow. That's so how nice rich you are when you can name your engagement rings, bro. That's real well.
My prediction?
Yeah.
So much awesome 80s music next week. I'm going to love it.
That's a great prediction. And of course, mine is that Daisy and I will be happily married forever and ever. That is a great prediction to have. Let's find out. I wonder if Matt goes back and sees what happened to his family. We'll see what happens till then. Until then, where can people find you if you want to be found? Everyone but Rachel. Christian, where can people find you if you want to be found?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ, and Thursday morning Pacific time, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, over on Popcorn Talk for Marvel Movie News, where, yes, we usually do talk a little bit about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but also all the latest Marvel movie news.
I was supposed to be on that, but I was busy giving a lecture to Harvard. So sorry about that. Katie, where can people find you?
You guys can find me on all social media and Twitch at KT_Christine. Also on Popcorn Talk Network's The Con Guy on Monday nights at 9, or late night streaming on Twitch for all your video game, all you video gamers out there.
Excellent to find you. Until next week, everybody. Hey.
Okay, excuse
fine.
Me.
Fine. You can plug your book. You can plug your book, but that's it.
I'm just going to insert myself. You can find me at Rachel Radner Author on Instagram, or all my books are on Amazon under Rachel Radner, or at Rach Goodman on Twitter.
Yeah, no one's going to find you. And of course, I am Taran Lidley. I am Taran all across the board. IamTHRAN. And find me hosting and paneling on a slew of other AfterBuzz after shows, because all of your favorite TV shows are my favorite TV shows too. Until next week, where we hope an LMD takes Rachel's place. Christian's back. Katie's back. We will be back, and we'll talk more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.